Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Crossover Across Time podcast. We're back for our NBA Finals preview. We've taken a little bit of a break. We didn't have a Monday episode. Of course, our last episode was Friday at the conclusion of the Western Conference Finals, which, of course, set the stage for this year's, the 2024 NBA Finals between the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the Boston Celtics, and the five seed in the Western Conference, the Dallas Mavericks. Congratulations to both teams once again for making it to this point in the season. Before we get into our preview, first of all, I'm your host, Carson. Welcome to the show and or welcome back to the show. Everyone who is tuning in and who has tuned in to the show, thank you for your support. We cannot thank you enough. Today, we're just focusing on all of the storylines, the facts, the stats, everything around this finals before game one tips off tomorrow night. So you can kind of get prepped with everything to keep in mind as the series begins. We'll give you the latest news as well. We have a bunch of news items there. And then, of course, we'll give you the schedule for the finals itself. So with that being said, let's just jump right into this preview here. And we mentioned the Celtics first. They were the number one seed in not only the Eastern Conference, but they were the best team record-wise in the NBA this season. And much of the year, it was a pretty foregone conclusion that they were the best team in the NBA. Interestingly enough, I was actually looking back. I considered us doing a review of our power rankings, either on our social media pages. Of course, if you haven't already checked those out, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But I thought about doing a kind of recap how our power rankings went. And it was interesting. I thought it'd be interesting to look at the average placement of each team, you know, week to week, if they were top of our power rankings 1 week and then third the next week. And, you know, you average that out across all 25 weeks ish, what their average placement was. And so I did that for kind of the top 10 teams, decided not to do the segment. But what I saw, interestingly enough, was still worth sharing here to kind of further illustrate this point. Teams like the Nuggets, Timberwolves were kind of around the 3 or 4 placement average. Teams like the Thunder and the Clippers that rose later had, you know, lower placement averages. The Celtics by far led the NBA in average placement in the power rankings out of 30 teams, 1.16, meaning that they were at number one except for a couple of weeks. And, you know, that just further illustrates how dominant this team was. Finished with a 64-18 overall record, first overall seed, of course, home court advantage throughout the playoffs. Excuse me. And they did it with a top three offense and defense, which is pretty sensational. There's a number of stats as far as how that puts them ahead of a lot of teams in NBA history. Of course, there's a lot of history with the Celtics. Their 23rd finals appearances is compared to the Dallas Mavericks making their third finals appearance this season. Mavericks last won the championship more recently, though. They won, of course, in 2011, a bit of an underdog Cinderella story. Dirk Nowitzki getting his first championship as well as Jason Kidd, and that's another talking point for just 1 minute. The Boston Celtics, meanwhile, last won their last championship in 2008. The Boston Three Party, the big three of Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen winning that championship. Worth noting, in this season, the Boston Celtics won the season series 2-0. And before you ask, yes, one of those games was after the trade deadline, once the Mavericks had acquired both PG Washington and Daniel Gafford, who, of course, have both been integral to the success of the Mavericks this season. Mavericks, of course, an underdog throughout the playoffs here, fifth seed. All three of their first of these, first round, second round, and conference final series, all three of those, they were underdogs. That'll be the same in the finals, of course. But this is in the Western Conference, a stacked Western Conference. Fifth in the West was still good for a 50-32 overall record, which is the equal record to the second seed in the East in the New York Knicks. So that is certainly worth noting. One of the big storylines that has been talked about a lot and will be a big talking point for especially the first game or two of this series is former players from the Celtics and the Mavericks facing their former teams. So with the Boston Celtics, of course, Kyrie Irving played there for about four seasons, had great on-court production in terms of the numbers and all-star games and those sort of things. And they were still a very potent playoff team, conference finals and the like, but it couldn't quite get over the hump with him there. Wasn't quite the right fit. And so, of course, he went to Brooklyn before now landing in Dallas, which he did last season at the trade deadline. And so Kyrie Irving back in Boston as the opponent in the finals. And that Boston crowd, that is going to be a heck of a thing to watch. We've seen the fireworks between the Boston fans and Kyrie in regular season games when it wasn't as certainly as nearly important as this type of a finals atmosphere. So it'll be interesting to see how both react. And then the same is true for Kristaps Porzingis of the Boston Celtics. He, of course, played previously on the Dallas Mavericks with Luka Doncic. They were the co-stars. And so Porzingis being the co-star to Tatum and Brown now, Kyrie Irving now the co-star of Luka Doncic. Very interesting. Both these teams having guys on the other team. Hey, we remember that guy and he was here. And that is very interesting to watch out for. So those two players, very interesting. And Porzingis especially, of course, he did not play for much of this playoffs. He's actually been out for just over a month at this point, but there is finally a concrete update. It was speculated with the conference semifinals and the conference finals about when he would be able to make a return. There wasn't really a push for it because the Celtics were able to take care of business regardless against both the Cavaliers and the Pacers. But now the official update, the word is center Kristaps Porzingis is planning on returning. He will be there for game one in Boston. He'll be playing for the Celtics game one of the NBA Finals. So that's great that he will be there. And that actually takes us to injury reports. We are starting this finals pretty healthy, both teams, honestly. Now, with the Mavericks, it's worth noting that Doncic, Luka Doncic, has been playing through some injuries. He certainly probably welcomed the near week that he got off in between the end of the conference finals and the beginning of the finals tomorrow. So he gets a little bit of a chance to rest. But you look at the reported injuries for both teams at this point, and perhaps some of that due to the fact that the game doesn't start till tomorrow. But Celtics, no injuries reported. At this moment, again, Porzingis listed as good to go for game one. For the Mavericks, the only injury I could find is that rookie Olivier Maxence Prosper, who's been dealing with an ankle injury, did not play in the series clinching game of the conference finals in Minnesota against the Timberwolves. That would have been last Thursday, but he could have a chance to play. I don't know the extent of this injury. It looked more like it was a day-to-day type injury. So otherwise, both teams looking like they're pretty clear on injury status. Of course, we'll have more concrete updates on that front after game one, and we're, more day-to-day, game-to-game updates there. So that's great to see the health of these teams. And then how about the star matchups here? Of course, the Kyrie thing, the Porzingis thing, those are interesting, but really where this series will begin and end is, as with most any final series, is the matchup between the stars and both teams with very potent star duos. Starting with the Boston Celtics, Jayson Tatum and Jaylen Brown, the two Jays, Brown, of course, with the immensely lucrative contract extension this last offseason. Tatum probably in line for a similar extension or new contract this season, this offseason. So high paid stars, and they've earned it. I mean, they've been sensational. this Celtics team, of course, five or six Eastern Conference finals within the last 8 or 9 years. They made the finals 2 years ago. These two have a proven record, and the team around them has only gotten better, of course. Both great scorers, can do it both in isolation as well as off ball. But both have also expanded their skill sets. Brown, very, very adept defensively in that conference finals series, especially against the Pacers, averaging something like three steals a game across the four-game sweep of the Pacers. He also can help distribute the ball a bit. He can rebound, but especially Jayson Tatum, he has really expanded his game as more of a triple threat. He works very well to make sure he's getting guys involved, and he is not seeking out his shot too much. And perhaps some have a criticism of him there that he needs to not go too far in that direction. He needs to, take his shots, get his shots, but also be willing to give it up. Some worry that maybe he's been a little bit too willing to give the ball up, but I would disagree. And especially the way that he turned up his level of play and offensive production over the last two playoff series, the series against Cleveland and then the series against Indiana, I think that Tatum could be set for a great final series. I think Brown is in a great rhythm coming off of that conference finals MVP. Those two are great. And again, there's a great cast around them. And we'll talk about that in just a minute as well. The other star duo on the Mavericks is the backcourt duo of Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving. What can you say about these guys? Luka is sensational. Of course, he's a triple double threat night in and night out. He does most everything for this team. His defense has stepped up as well, and that's been a big theme for the Mavericks. This turn of success ever since the trade deadline really has been predicated on the improvement of their team defense and what they're able to do on that side of the basketball. Luka contributing there, as well as, of course, his usual offensive output. And then Kyrie. These two kind of have had a theme in this playoffs of one takes the first half, one takes the second half in terms of the offensive focal point. And they switch which half it is a couple times. And that's not necessarily a script I'm sure they're following, but that's just how it's played out. And Kyrie's been great, offensively, very efficient. He has control. I mean, he's obviously, we know he's one of the great ball handlers in the history of the game. And he's gotten even better. I mean, you can't bother him defensively, it seems. He can get wherever he wants with the basketball. He can hit tough shots. He can get clutch shots. And he can be a great team player as well. I think his defense has also stepped up in that Mavericks team focused defensive improvement. He can get some rebounds. He's athletic. He can distribute. I think both matchups, the two star duos facing off against each other, are great modern examples of the NBA superstar, where these guys are just so versatile. Obviously, they're great scorers at a number of levels, inside and out, three pointers, you name it. But they've got ability to distribute the ball, to find the open guy, especially at the 3-point line. And these teams have been deadly. How about the backcourt matchups here? Of course, we mentioned Luka and Kyrie being the backcourt stars for the Mavericks, but the Celtics, Brown and Tatum are forwards. They're backcourt guys. They're two guards, Drew Holiday and Derek White, both all defensive team members this season. And that is going to be super intriguing, especially as far as who matches up on Luka Doncic. Is it going to be, Holiday, White may be the most probable, but then would they try Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum? And that could also open up the interesting idea of the versatility and switchability of a Celtics defense, especially with Porzingis starting and or coming off the bench, depending on how they want to play him to start the series. They've got Horford as the backup or the starter, depending on which way they go for either of those guys. Both of them fairly decent at switching, especially if it can just be on a four guy or maybe a three. But the switchability of the Celtics defense, and especially those all defensive guards, Drew Holiday, Derek White, against the Mavericks All Stars, I think that's going to be very interesting to see. Wanted to touch on as well some of the great supporting players for both of these teams. I want to make sure I pull up a full roster so I don't gloss over anyone, because you never know when a guy who's only been getting, a handful of minutes a game might step in and have a nice little moment, have a nice 10, 12-minute stretch of production in a game or something of that nature. Starting with the Celtics, I mean, their starting lineup are all near all-star quality players. Even Derek White was in, discussion there. Brown and Tatum at the forwards, Porzingis in the side. White and Holiday, I mean, just great lineup. And then the bench is serviceable. They get the job done. It's not the deepest bench in the world, but Peyton Pritchard is a backup guard, can play off the ball, mainly a point guy, though. He's a little bit more diminutive, but he can shoot very well. He shoots confidently. He's got a great handle. They've got Sam Hauser, knockdown 3-point shooter off the bench. He is going to be a nice piece for the Celtics here, as is, of course, Al Horford. Him being versatile off the bench, savvy big man. He's hungry to get his first ever championship. He's going to be key for them here. They've also got a couple other backup bigs. They've got Luke Kornet, Xavier Tillman, who they acquired at the deadline, and Nemus Keita. And hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. I know he's a Utah State guy, but all three of those guys can fill in minutes and they can be a little versatile. Kornet can stretch the floor just a bit. He's a little more mobile. Tillman, a bit of a bigger body, as is Keita. So all three of those guys give them good depth at the backup bigs. Not that they usually need to go that far into the bench. And then they've got some other wings. They've got O'Shea Brissett, a veteran at this point, Jordan Walsh, the rookie, and Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk, or Svi Mikhailiuk. He can hit the 3-pointer when open. I'm not sure if he'll get minutes, or if Walsh or Brissett or even Keita would get minutes really here, or Jaden Springer for that matter. But if they have to go that deep, I think these guys could, with fresh legs, I mean very fresh legs, they could come in, and you never know when anyone could have a great surprise performance. Looking at the Mavericks, we've mentioned Kyrie and Luka. And the front court, the trade deadline acquisition front court, has been so great. PJ Washington, the power forward. Daniel Gafford starting at center in place of the rookie who now comes off the bench, Derek Lively, the second. That three-man rotation is great, and there's some versatility. You can play Lively and Gafford together and have Washington off the bench if you really need to. But they all, the way I've kind of described it before, if you can have Washington, Gafford, and Lively in their combined minutes being that front court, getting you 30-something points collectively, 15, 18 rebounds collectively, and, three or four blocks collectively. That is great production. If they can get that consistently, that is going to be a real problem for the Celtics to manage. So they've got a great front court. They've even got some veteran experience behind those guys. And Dwight Powell, a guy who was a starter for a long time with the Mavericks, he gives them some depth. They've got Derek Jones Jr. starting at the small forward, and it's a unique choice, but he has proven them right. He's been able to, not star level numbers, not that you'd even expect that, but he has come in and done a great job. He knocks down the open three. He's of course very athletic and very long. He can help keep their rebounding identity, get them out on the break if they want to do that. The Mavericks, shades of Lob City almost in some of their fast break opportunities in the playoffs, getting lobs to guys like Gafford and Lively and even Derek Jones, so you can keep that going for him. So he's been a great fit there. Off the bench, Dante Exum, veteran, versatile guy. They've even been playing him at forward sometimes. Of course, we've usually thought of him as a bigger point guard. Josh Green, younger guy, as a shooting guard who has some moxie to him. Maxi Kleba off the bench as well, a versatile 3-and-D type bigger forward, can play probably the 3 or the 4. Tim Hardaway Jr. is on here too, and I think he's going to be a big X factor for Dallas. He's been a great offensive producer in his career, and especially a 3-point marksman. If he can get minutes and get, that productivity added to this lineup and take some of the offensive burden off Kyrie and Luka, that could really be a coup for them as well. Markieff Morris coming off the bench here, added veteran presence. And they've also got a couple other young guards, Jaden Hardy and AJ Lawson. That's your lineups, your rosters for both teams. Again, the defense integral for both rosters. 3-point shots as well, though. Boston, the Celtics, 3-point dominance. They've led the league in both 3-pointers made and attempted this season. The Mavericks have specialized a little bit more in corner threes specifically. They led the playoffs in that category. But also worth noting, the Celtics allowed the fewest corner threes in the playoffs. So the corner three could be a point where the series is win or lost, won or lost. So the Celtics, of course, have dominated from the three throughout the regular season and the playoffs regardless. And then how about this? Showing you perhaps where Boston is favored here. The Celtics, the best team in the entirety of the regular season, the entirety of the first round, second round, and conference finals in terms of plus minus as a team in each of those rounds. They had the best plus minus number in the regular season, first round, second round, and conference finals. The first time that's happened in the play-by-play era, which of course goes back to 1997, the 96-97 season. That is pretty phenomenal. And again, Celtics very favorite here. The last big storyline I wanted to talk here, the coaches for both teams. Firstly, for the Dallas Mavericks, Jason Kidd. Of course, he is one of the all-time great point guards in the history of the game. A bit similar to Luka, not with the scoring, but the triple threat aspect. A big guard who could just rebound very well, but of course was a fantastic distributor and could get you occasional points as well. He'd probably average, 15, 16 points a game. But he was the floor general. And now he's the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. He was the coach in 2022 when they made the Western Conference Finals that year. So he has been a part of some great success for the Mavs. They're back in the finals, and he was a champion, the championship point guard on that 2011 Mavericks team. Now he tries to repeat that as the coach of this iteration of the Mavericks squad. Meanwhile, Joe Mazzulla for the Celtics, a young head coach, only his second year as a head coach of the Celtics. I believe he's in his 30s, if not early 40s. But what this means with both of them making the finals, this is the first finals with two African-American head coaches since 1975. That year, the Golden State Warriors faced off against the Washington Wizards. Wizards coached by Casey Jones, of course, a great Celtics player who became a championship point coach with the Celtics of the 80s. And the Warriors were led by Al Addles, a Hall of Famer. Fantastic head coach, the Warriors winning the championship that season. So that's another great storyline. Those two being able to continue to, trend set and break barriers in that regard. That's great to see. Couple other notes before we get into thoughts on how this series could play out. Just some notes about the finals and news surrounding the finals. Firstly, the NBA has announced the 12 officials that have been selected to officiate the NBA finals. Those are Tony Brothers, James Capers, Mark Davis, Scott Foster, John Goble, David Guthrie, Bill Kennedy, Courtney Kirkland, Kevin Scott, Josh Tiven, James Williams, and Zach Zarba. Those are your 12 officials. Additionally, Tyler Ford and Ben Taylor have been assigned as alternate officials. So keep that in mind if anything happens with the 12 assigned officials. And then finally, the NBA has announced the players participating in this season's player correspondent program for the 2024 NBA Finals. Those will be Jabari Smith Jr., both Amen and Ausar Thompson, the twins, Keontae George, and Brandon Podziemski. Of course, four of these five guys, rookies, Smith Jr., a sophomore. And they will work as listed in the first four games. Smith will work game one, the Thompson twins game two, Keontae George game three, and then Brandon Podziemski game four. Not sure if the series goes longer than that, which very good chance it does. If one of these guys would then come back, or if they're just doing those first four for the program, but we'll see what happens there. But that's all the news and all of the groundwork that I want to lay for getting into what could happen this series. And I think that Boston has been favored for good reason. A lot of people are going to try and disparage the Celtics as far as their road to the finals. The fact that in the first round, Jimmy Butler was injured. The Heat didn't have much of a chance to win that series without Jimmy Butler. In the second round, the Cavaliers were without Donovan Mitchell for a couple of key games towards the end of the series. And then against the Pacers, a lot of people have discounted that team, feeling that it wasn't as strong as a lot of the other possible teams they could have faced. For example, if Boston had faced the Knicks in the conference finals, people thought that could be a different series. And there's a lot of what ifs there. And I don't necessarily discredit people for having those conversations, but I think that is not a great understanding of what the Celtics have done and their level of execution. You can knock them for dropping, both in the first round and the second round, the game twos in Boston, losing those games. But to respond with back-to-back wins on the road, not only that, but three straight wins to close out those series in five games, I think shows the maturation and experience of the Celtics team. Veteran presence, not only with, Holiday and Horford, guys who have been around the longest, but especially Brown and Tatum, the number of playoff years that they have built up. They've put in their work, they've earned their dues, and they're in great position to try and win a championship here, not just because of those previous years, but because of this year and what this team has done collectively, defensively, offensively, unselfishness, especially Tatum and Brown really working together and working with their team. This team has just been sensational. They've really done work to put themselves in great position. And again, they took care of business in the playoffs. 12-2 record to get to the finals, less wear and tear, and they're getting back a near all-star caliber center in Kristaps Porzingis, who they won without in the second and third rounds. And he's now had probably ample time. We've seen injured players rush back to get back into the finals or a key playoff series and then get injured quickly because they weren't fully ready. I think that Porzingis, there was a chance he could have returned if they needed him, but they gave him that time to fully get healed. He's been participating in scrimmages. It seems like he is ready. And so that is going to make the Celtics team even better. That is just so exciting. I think they're going to be so potent. You look at the Mavericks as well, though. This is going to be a great series. I think at least a six-game series. I think that'd be a very safe bet to have it be a six-game series, regardless of who wins or who you think will win. Luka is not afraid of the moment. And it'll be his first finals, but certainly not his first deep playoff run. And he's no stranger to hostile atmospheres and visiting arenas. He is going to be great. Kyrie, of course, is experienced. He's a former champion with the 2016 Cavaliers. Luka is the conference finals MVP this last Western Conference Finals. Those two are going to be great. I think for the Mavericks, what could hurt them is a lot of the other guys' lack of deep playoff experience, especially finals experience. Outside of Kyrie, maybe Markieff Morris would be the only other guy. Let me double check that for you, but that I think would have finals experience. I mean, that looks right to me as far as guys with finals experience. Kyrie and then Markieff Morris, and you compare that to a lot of the Celtics again, Brown, Tatum, Derek White, a key member of that 2022 team, as well as this year's team. Jrue Holiday winning a championship in 2021 with the Milwaukee Bucks. Off the bench, Al Horford has been there in that last appearance 2 years ago. And even Luke Kornet was on that roster. So the experience is definitely in the favor of the Celtics. That's really the question mark. We're not sure how they'll respond to that, but then sometimes that's also a blessing. Sometimes it's a case of you don't know what you don't know, and you're able to just come in and play loose, play free. The youth of it says, well, we're just going to enjoy it. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. But then that's also back to the other side of it, where sometimes the youth said, I think this was Dennis Scott that said this. I was actually just rewatching that 30 for 30 about the 90s Orlando Magic and the Shaq and Penny tandem. But then Scott said, no, it was Horace Grant. I apologize. Horace Grant said, the youth says, if we don't win this time, we'll win it next time when we get back. But the experience says, if we don't win it this time, we might not be back to try and win it again. And so that will definitely be an advantage for the Celtics, likely. But again, the Mavericks could just come in and play loose and play free and have a great time of it. If you're asking me for a pick here, I would probably say Celtics in about six games. I think this is going to be a fantastic matchup of these two teams. I think Luka is going to put on a show. But I think the Boston Celtics really understand the volume and the weight of this moment and this opportunity after having lost 2 years ago, and you wonder, can you get back? And they've put in the work and they've built a phenomenal team. Getting Jrue Holiday, I think, is just the icing on the cake here. He's gonna, really, him and Horford are gonna be the driving forces, along with Tatum and Brown really being, I think they've elevated their professionalism. Those guys are gonna power the Celtics team, I think, to a championship. It feels that way. Mavericks are going to put in a great series. Mavericks have a great bright future for them, but that would be my pick. But again, I think it can go either way. I think Celtics are more likely, but it's going to be a great series, and I can't wait for that to start tomorrow night. And of course, we'll get into the schedule in just one moment. Real quick, let's talk key news, and I have to start with this because I cannot tell you how happy and excited I am about the Utah Jazz getting the uniforms right. And I think we've maybe talked about it once or twice on the podcast. I try not to do too much Jazz news because I know that not everyone cares that much about, one specific team, and especially the Jazz not being that great of a roster right now. Let me paint the picture for you. 2 years ago, at the end of the 2022 season, there was plenty of questions around the team about moving Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. The Jazz, in the midst of trading both of those players and starting from scratch, unveil a brand new uniform set. They're going to go bold. It's a remix. The colors now are white, black, and like a yellow, basically a highlighter yellow. And there's a white uniform, black uniform, highlighter yellow was the icon uniform, or the road uniform, essentially. And very simple text, big numbers. It's an interesting idea, but the execution was very lacking. And you could tell it even from the way they announced it. The uniforms had leaked about a month or two prior to the announcement and were universally panned. Maybe not universally, but most people, especially Jazz fans themselves, panned the uniforms and did not like the direction because it had nothing to do with the Jazz history of uniforms or visual identity. It honestly was, and this is not to disparage Ryan Smith too much, but he just kind of has an affinity for that kind of style and color. He's done the same thing with Real Salt Lake. And so he wanted to do that and didn't get quite enough fan feedback to prove that that would be good. once it leaked, the Jazz PR team realized this is not going to go over well. They're not happy with this. So the way the rebrand was announced was actually with a bit of a last-ditch effort and a petition probably to the NBA to allow the Jazz to wear the throwbacks that they had worn a couple seasons prior, the Mountain throwbacks. And they said, hey, purple's back. We got the throwbacks. We're going to wear these next year. And by the way, these are our new base uniforms, technically. And so they did the best damage control they could. They also, as part of that announcement, shared the city uniform they would wear the following season, which ended up being this year, as well as the city uniform, which both of which were very well received, especially the city uniform, which brought a modern take on the Mountain style uniform of the team's golden years and finals appearances. And so that brings us to today. The response has easily indicated that the Jazz fans want purple. They want the Mountain imagery. They want those things. And so the Jazz are going to execute on that. They're going to do it. And I, you know, the fear was because they announced the highlighter stuff in 2022. And the fear was they would not be able to make a change. Nike would not allow them to make a change until the uniforms had been worn for at least 4 years, maybe 5 years. So that's a ways down the way. It's only been 2 years they've worn the uniforms. Well, now it looks like they petitioned and lobbied and worked very hard with Nike to figure out a way that they could rectify the situation sooner. And so here's what that looks like. Essentially four new uniforms unveiled, three of which will be the basis for the long-term identity for the team. So what that means is next season, they will keep some of the current look. And let me go ahead and see if I can pull up this exact announcement from the team. Because it goes into a little bit more, detail on the specifics, the timeline of how this will go. But here we go. Okay. So the way this will work is next season, the 2024-2025 NBA season, the Jazz will have their association uniform, the white uniform with the black text and the yellow trim. They will start with the same statement edition, which is the black uniform with the yellow text. Their city uniform will be similar to what they had this year, but with white Utah text and white actual classic Mountain in the background, similar to what they had on the actual late 90s, early 2000s uniforms. That will be the city edition. They will not have the icon edition, or if they do have it, they're just not going to wear it, which is the yellow uniform. At the beginning of the new year in 2025, their statement edition will switch over to a different black uniform with white text and a gray Mountain gradient in the background. And it looks very sharp. I like that one. And I do like the city uniform they'll wear this next year as well. I have a couple of really minor detail gripes about it, but it's pretty good. So that'll be the way they'll get to segue into the new look. And then officially in the 2025-2026 season, the new look will be fully in. They'll have the icon edition uniform, which will essentially be what this year's city uniform was, but with some added blue colors. And that's also part of this. It's not just purple and retaining black, but they'll also add a sky blue, which I think is a perfect accent color for these. Their home uniform will be essentially the inverse of that city uniform. It'll be a white uniform with purple Mountain gradient in the background, white Utah text, purple numbers. Those both look great. And again, that blue accent is phenomenal on both of those. That statement uniform they add at the beginning of 2025 will stay around, the black with the Mountain gradient. And then they'll have a new city uniform for that 2025-2026 NBA season. Again, more detailed than probably most want. It'll tie in with the Junior Jazz youth basketball program as well. They'll be kind of the first to actually get to wear some of these uniforms. But I am just so excited. I'm so happy that they listened to the fan feedback and pushed to make this happen as quickly as possible, it seems. And it's just a home run. They've gone from the, in my opinion, easily the worst uniforms in the league to Of course, my biased opinion, I think they're going to be one of the best uniform sets in the league. They'll be consistent. They'll have great colors. It'll tie into history. They're going to look great. And it should hopefully, for our sake, line up with an improved Jazz roster and a return within the next year or two to the playoffs. So, again, a deeper look into that than maybe people needed, but I wanted to go into it because as a Jazz fan, it's something I'm very passionate about. So I'm just excited that they got that right. Can't wait to see those on the court. That's our first news item. A little bit of a longer spiel though there. Let's get into the rest of the items here. Starting with the Sacramento Kings. We have some transactional notes for a few teams, starting with the Kings. The Kings and head coach Mike Brown have agreed to a 2-year contract extension to keep him with the Kings through the 2027 season. So he's going to be around for a few more years. I think that's a good move. Of course, the coach for the team that ended up breaking the lengthy playoff drought, getting him back into the playoffs. They had been in discussion on an extension for a while. At one point, it seemed like they might not get there, but they've got an extension in place. Good move for Sacramento. The Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks and GM Nico Harrison have agreed to a multi-year contract extension as well. So the architect for this finals team in the Mavericks, he's going to stick around. Obviously, a no-brainer there, a home run. As is this move, Minnesota Timberwolves and President Tim Connelly, they've agreed to a restructured contract. He's locked in for this upcoming 2025 season. He will still have an opt-out clause that's been moved to next summer. But of course, the Timberwolves want to keep on a guy who powered them to arguably their best season in franchise history. So that's a great move. Finally, the Detroit Pistons, they're going to be parting ways with general manager Troy Weaver following the hire of New Orleans executive Trajan Langdon as president of basketball operations. So that's your latest transactional news. We do have one other sort of transactional note, draft related. The official word on this is in for the Los Angeles Lakers. The New Orleans Pelicans will defer their pick swap with the Lakers until 2025. So Lakers retain their 2024 first round pick, which of course is 17th overall. That means that the pick swap is in place for next year's draft. The Lakers pick will be the Pelicans pick. And that pick swap is part of the Anthony Davis trade. So still lingering effects from that blockbuster move. Other news, we have a note, another note for the Dallas Mavericks. Kyrie Irving has signed his father, Dredrick Irving, to his Anta shoe line as a signature athlete. First time that that's ever happened, that a son has signed a father to a shoe line as a signature athlete. That's pretty cool. I think everything that we've seen, those two have a very special relationship as father and son. And so that's a pretty cool gesture to be able to sign him. Dredrick Irving, I believe, played college basketball. And so he's certainly an athlete. And I think that's some pretty cool news. News Boston Celtics related. One of their all-time greats, Larry Bird. The Larry Bird Museum has officially opened in Terre Haute, Indiana. So pretty cool. If you're in Indiana, you might want to check it out. If I'm ever there, I definitely would want to check that out. Should be a great spot to learn about the Hick from French Lick and one of the great players in NBA history, of course. And then a couple more heavy news items here, starting with former NBA Defensive Player of the Year, Alonzo Mourning. He recently underwent surgery to remove prostate after diagnosis of stage 3 prostate cancer. The report is that the cancer did not spread, and Mourning is now considered cancer-free, which is great news, of course, in this situation. We're going to wish him the best, certainly, as he works to continue recovering from the surgery, and we certainly wish that he stays cancer-free. And we're wishing him and his family the best at this time. And then some unfortunate news. Former NBA player Drew Gordon, who is the older brother of Nuggets forward Aaron Gordon, he passed away Thursday, May 30th, after being involved in a car accident. Our condolences and our best wishes to the Gordon family and all those affiliated, the NBA family as a whole at this time. Definitely tough news. So just wanted to make sure we were updated on all of those key news items. And with that, let's go ahead and get into the schedule for the NBA finals this year. Again, I can't believe actually just looking at my script here, I wrote down the times for the games. I didn't write down what day. Unbelievable. I can't believe that I would do that, but here's what we've got. Game one, of course, is tomorrow. That's going to be on ABC at 8:30. The Boston Celtics host the Dallas Mavericks for game one of the NBA Finals. Thursday night is game one. Then it'll be on Sunday that we'll have game two, the Boston Celtics hosting that as well. That's on ABC at 8 o'clock. Then for game three, we'll go back to Dallas. That'll be on Wednesday, ABC at 8:30. The Mavericks will host the Celtics for game three. And then on Friday, the Mavericks will host the Celtics for game four of that series, also on ABC at 8:30. That'll take us through the first four games and the first definitive games of the series. Now, if necessary, game five would be on ABC at 8:30 in Boston. That would be on Monday the 17th, as the Celtics would host the Mavericks. If a game six was necessary, that would be back in Dallas on Thursday, May the 20th on ABC at 8:30. And then if necessary, game seven, and that would be the defining, deciding game of the series if it needed it. The Celtics would host the Mavericks in game seven on Sunday the 23rd on ABC at 8 o'clock. So that's your schedule. Hopefully, I feel like I might have said May for one of these. Of course, all these games are in June. June 6th, game one, the 9th, game two, game three on the 12th, game four on the 14th, game five on the 17th, game six on the 20th, and then game seven on the 23rd. Again, five through seven are games only played if necessary. So that's your upcoming schedule. Game one tomorrow night. Can't wait for that to start, and hopefully we've helped lay a good enough foundation for you so you have all the picture, all the puzzle pieces in place to see what we're going to get into with this year's finals. So with that, that takes care of our show. We'll go ahead and give you a This Day in History fact to wrap things up. And this one, a great one to focus on, especially with recent news over the last few weeks. On this day, June 5th of 1977, the phenomenon known as Blazer Mania reached a peak as Bill Walton blocked eight shots, a record for an NBA Finals game, which has since been tied by three players. And Portland beat Philadelphia 109-107 in Game 6 to win its only NBA championship. A great moment in NBA history and, encapsulated and made possible by one of the great players of all time. Again, rest in peace, Bill Walton, one of the all-time greats. So with that, that is our show. Again, thank you all for listening. Game one tomorrow. Can't wait. But otherwise, thanks for listening. And we'll be back on Friday to recap how game one went down.